أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Verse number 28 of Surah A'raf وَإِذَا فَعَلُوا فَاحِشَةً قَالُوا وَجَدْنَا عَلَيْهَا آبَاءَنَا وَاللَّهُ أَمَرَنَا بِهَا قُلْ إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يَأْمُرُ بِالْفَحْشَاءِ أَتَقُولُونَ عَلَى اللَّهِ مَا لَا تَعْلَمُونَ When they commit an indecency, they say, we found our fathers practicing it, and Allah has enjoined it upon us. Say, indeed, Allah does not enjoin indecencies. Do you attribute to Allah what you do not know? This verse is a completion of the previous verse. As I said, after the story of Adam and Eve, Allah gives the children of Adam four different types of advice. Which started with the previous verse, يَا بَنِي آدَمْ لَا يَفْتَنَنَّكُمُ الشَّيْطَانُ كَمَا أَخْرَجَ أَبَوَيْكُمْ مِنَ الْجَنَّةِ Sorry, this is the second one. The first one was, يَا بَنِي آدَمْ, verse 26, قَدْ أَنزَلْنَا عَلَيْكُمْ لِبَاسًا يُوَارِي سَوْآتِكُمْ And then it says, O children of Adam, do not let Shaitan tempt you like he expelled your parents from paradise, stripping them of their garments. Now, because it talks about stripping them of their garments, then the argument is somehow dragged into a different discussion which is related to this. And this is one of the styles of the Quran. Sometimes when you recite the Quran, you think that the verses are not connected to each other. The reason is we sometimes lose the context or lose the cause of revelation, and therefore we see this disconnectedness. However, the style of the Quran is that when it is discussing about an issue, it sometimes discusses other issues which are related to it, but probably the context is lost to us. And this is one of them. One of the practices that the people of Jahiliyyah were doing, some of the tribes, some sub-tribes of Mudhar, like Quraysh and Kanana, they used to do tawaf in a very peculiar way. And that was when they used to come for tawaf. You know, the hajj and tawaf and sa'i and all these things existed before Islam, because this was something which was legislated for Ibrahim alayhi salam, and then all his followers were doing it, and the Arabs, who were actually the custodians of this tradition, gave it lots of its importance. Now, some of the tribes just imagined different things for themselves, as we do today. There is a very nice relation here between what we usually think about different issues nowadays as well. They thought that we go to Tawaf, this is house of our gods, and we want to do circumambulation, we want to dedicate ourselves to them. And the clothes in which we are, or we have come to Hajj with our clothes, they are the clothes that we have committed sin in them. How can we do tawaf with these clothes? And therefore, we have to take off our clothes and do the tawaf. Now, of course, certainly this is what we do today as well. When we go to Hajj, we do not do tawaf with our dress, which we used to put on in our houses or wherever in our travel. We have to put on ihram, which is different clothing. Now, they thought that now that we strip ourselves of these clothes, it's better to do tawaf without any clothes, completely nude, and somehow dedicating ourselves to our gods. This is what they thought. And it had become a habit that when these tribes, who were numerous in number, I mean, just imagine of Quraysh and Kanana, who were sub-tribes of Mudhar, these were huge number of people. They used to come, they undressed men and women, and they just put a very, very simple thing on their private parts, and they started to do tawaf. Now, this became a habit when the Prophet, of course, came. It was continuing. And Prophet, peace be on him, condemned this practice. Now they were surprised. Why do you condemn us for this? This is something which we have been practicing for years. Now here Allah mentions that this is a fahisha. Of course, this is cause of revelation. We can then look at the verse without the cause of revelation. It has a general meaning. Usually when the verse talks about a specific case, we can somehow think about it in a more general terms. Now, when we read the Quran, we may not have this incident in back of our minds at all. We may not know about it, and we should understand the meaning out of it, which we do. However, if we know what was the cause of revelation, we can understand it better, and then we can generalize it to things which are more related to the context of the verse. So, here, of course, in the previous verse, the second exhortation of God was that يَا بَنِي آدَمْ لَا يَفْتَنَنَّكُمُ الشَّيْطَانُ كَمَا أَخْرَجَ عَبَوَيْكُمْ مِنَ الْجَنَّةِ. Beware that Shaitan would not deceive you the way he expelled your parents from the garden, stripping them of their garments. And of course, the garments, Allah mentions there are two types of garments. As Mullah Fathullah said, لباس التقوى ولباس الفتوى, both of them they were stripped of. And then here it says, they come to do tawaf, they come to dedicate themselves for worship, and they strip themselves of everything. And this is a fahisha. And fahisha is extreme indecency. وَإِذَا فَعَلُوا فَاحِشَةً. When they do something which is extremely indecent. Now, one thing which it tells us is that nudity and nakedness is extremely indecent, according to all religions, actually. وَإِذَا فَعَلُوا فَاحِشَةً قَالُوا وَجَدْنَا عَلَيْهَا آبَاءَنَا. When they commit an indecency, they say, we found our fathers practicing it. Now, of course, this is not a very convincing argument, that because we found our fathers practicing it, so we continue practicing it. And of course, in traditional societies, this may be taken as a forceful argument, because traditional societies usually give great importance to the traditions of the forefathers. So it may have been a forceful argument, which Quran rejects in many, many places. That's when we sent a prophet, the people said, we have found our fathers, and now وَجَدْنَا أَبَاءَنَا عَلَىٰ أُمَّةٍ وَإِنَّا عَلَىٰ أَثَارِهِمْ مُهْتَدُونَ. We have found our fathers on a practice, and we follow them. And Quran says, قُلْ أَوَلَوْ كَانَ أَبَاءُهُمْ لَا يَعْقِلُونَ شَيْئًا. Even if your parents didn't understand anything, you want to follow them. So this practice of imitation is rejected in many, many different places of the Quran. However, they knew that this is not a very forceful argument, so they brought in another argument. وَإِذَا فَعَلُوا فَاحِشَةً قَالُوا وَجَدْنَا عَلَيْهَا آبَاءَنَا وَاللَّهُ أَمَرَنَا بِهَا. Allah has actually commanded us, enjoined us to do it. Now, how? The exegetes have different opinions here about what was meant by polytheists when they said وَاللَّهُ أَمَرَنَا بِهَا. Here, from Hassan, it is reported that he said what they meant by وَاللَّهُ أَمَرَنَا بِهَا is that this is a command which Allah has ordained in his creation. Now, you know, we have two types of amr. Here, I was looking for what Hassan al-Basri had said exactly. He says that لَأَنَّ أَهْلَ الْجَاهِلِيَّةِ كَانُوا أَهْلَ إِجْبَارٍ, because they believed in predestination, polytheists. And this is quite clearly seen throughout the Quran, the polytheists were predeterminists. They thought that everything is ordained, they cannot change anything. And this was one of their arguments against the Prophet. That's وَغَالُوا لَوْ شَاءَ اللَّهُ مَا أَشْرَكْنَا نَحْنُ وَلَا أَبَاؤُنَا. If Allah willed, we wouldn't have become polytheists. He has willed. That is why we are polytheists. The same argument that, of course, all predeterminists would provide. So one of the meaning of Wallahu Amarana Baha is that this Amr is a command of creation. You know, we have two types of command, as the theologians say. One type of command is command of creation. Al-Amru Takwini. That means Allah has willed His creation to be like that. The other type of command is al-amru tashri'i, command of legislation. Now, command of creation cannot be violated because that is the will of God in His creation. Command of legislation can be violated because it's only a command to be obeyed, not a command of creation, not something that Allah has created things according to that. So, and this actually, not being able to differentiate between these two commands, have confused many people. That's saying, well, if God commands us to do something, how can we do again? How can we do anything against it? And in many different poetry, especially in poetries of Khayyam, we have that he says that whatever I do, of course, it's attributed to him. Whatever I do is something that Allah has predestined from eternity. If I drink wine, Allah has predestined this from eternity. And if I do not do it, then I have actually violated the law of God. Of course, the law, the tashri'i, the command of creation, I have violated it. Now, here, some exegetes say that when they say Wallahu amarana biha, means that this is a command of creation. He has willed so, he has wished so, and we are doing it. If he didn't wish so, he would have stopped us doing it. And this is, of course, the argument of all religious culprits. I say religious culprits because they try to attribute all their wrongdoings and evil doings to God. So they are both religious and wrongdoers, and they want to somehow justify what they do. The others say that, no, this is not command of creation. It's command of legislation, and they meant it. Wallahu amarana biha means Allah has commanded us to do this. This is something that we are told by God to do, and we are following it. Well, of course, there was no such a command because they didn't have such a prophet to come to them and tell them that you have to do tawaf naked. So they meant that because our forefathers used to do it, and our forefathers never did anything wrong, never did anything unless by command of God, so therefore it means that Allah had commanded them, and we are following them because we know that they didn't do anything without the command of God. So, وَإِذَا فَعَلُوا فَاحِشَةً قَالُوا وَجَدْنَا عَلَيْهَا آبَاءَنَا وَاللَّهُ أَمَرَنَا بِهَا. And Allah has ordered us to do it. قُلْ. Now, the response to what they said. And this is very interesting in the Quran, that always argument is answered by argument. قُلْ إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يَأْمُرُ بِالْفَحْشَاءِ. Say, Allah never commands to indecency. Now, this command again can be taken as command of creation. Certainly, Allah never creates anything which is evil. As I said, evil is a byproduct of our free will and our different harm and benefits that we have in this world. This is why evil is created. Allah never creates evil. So, إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يَأْمُرُ بِالْفَحْشَاءِ. Allah never in His creation has done or has made anything which should be indecent. Indecency is created by you. Or command of legislation, which is more probable, of course. Allah never commands anyone to indecency. So, if you are doing something, thinking that it is command of God, and it's indecent, it's against justice, And this is a very important issue, because sometimes the way we understand law from the scripture, from hadith and from the Quran, sometimes our methods lead us to a conclusion which is against justice. We know it. Intuitively, something that we understand is against justice, and then we say, well, this is law of God. And if we come to such a conclusion by our methodology in fiqh, or in understanding Quran and hadith, we should know that Allah never, ever commands us to injustice. Never commands us to something which is counterintuitively against justice. And this is what he says. Or against decency. قُلْ إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يَأْمُرُ بِالْفَحْشَاءِ. Say, indeed, Allah does not enjoin indecencies. And then, of course, in the next verse says, what Allah enjoins to you. And this is, I think, a very, very important criterion for us, for all the jurists to have in mind. We know that in previous religions, the jurists came to conclusions according to their scripture, which were really against the law of justice, against the rule of reason. And this is a categorical statement here that قُلْ إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يَأْمُرُ بِالْفَحْشَاءِ. Allah never enjoins indecencies. أَتَقُولُونَ عَلَى اللَّهِ مَا لَا تَعْلَمُونَ. Now, you تقولون, this قول has meaning of attributing something to God. Or قول also means to attribute something wrongly to someone, to attribute lies to someone. This is also the meaning of qawl, or saying something which is evil about someone. Qawl and dhikr, both of them. For example, in case of Ibrahim, when he broke the idols and people came back to the city and they saw that their idols were broken, they said, قَالُوا مَنْ فَعَلَنَا هَذَا بِآلِهَتَنَا. Who has done this to our lords, to our gods? قَالُوا سَمِعْنَا فَتًا يَذْكُرُهُمْ يُقَالُ لَهُ إِبْرَاهِيمُ. We heard a young man was talking evil about them. So يَذْكُرُهُمْ here means talking evil. So يَقُولُ also means talking evil about someone. يَذْكُرُ or يَقُولُ, so it has that meaning. Here, أَتَقُولُونَ عَلَى اللَّهِ means you talk evil about God, of something which you have no knowledge. Now, what is your knowledge? Where this knowledge has come from, that you say that Allah has ordered us, has commanded us to do this. Now, again, put this in the context. They were coming to the house, they were doing the tawaf, naked, because they thought that it is not nice to do tawaf in clothes that they had, in which they had committed sins. And then they said, this is what Allah has ordered us. Here it says, أَتَقُولُونَ عَلَى اللَّهِ مَا لَا تَعْلَمُونَ. You are saying evil about God. You are attributing evil to Him about which you have no knowledge. مَا لَا تَعْلَمُونَ. This no knowledge, they said, Allahu amarana biha. God has commanded us. Of course, they didn't have a direct command. They had somehow deduced this command from the practice of their fathers, because they thought that their fathers wouldn't have done it unless if they were told by someone that this is the law of God. And here it says, well, this is not a valid argument. Your forefathers may have been wrong. You are attributing something to God which is out of ignorance, of which you have no knowledge. Then another argument is mentioned here. قُلْ أَمَرَ رَبِّي بِالْقِسْطِ. Say, my Lord has commanded qist. Now, again, this is the highest criterion of any law that we may deduce from the law of the Quran or hadith or whatever, which is qist. My Lord has ordered qist. If anything goes against qist, you should know that Allah has not commanded it. Allah has not ordered it. These are very, very deep and very basic verses of the Quran, actually. And it's very interesting that they come after the story of Adam and Eve, saying that from the beginning of creation, you had that story. Now listen to what I'm going to tell you. Very, very basic things are mentioned here. Allah has ordered qist. Now, what is qist? Qist means, qist has two meanings actually, two opposite meanings. Qist means to deviate. To deviate. Now, if you deviate towards haqq, that means justice. So the qist is used in the meaning of justice. If you deviate towards batil, that is injustice. So qist means both justice and injustice. And in Arabic language, we have many words which have opposite meanings. So, for example, we have وَأَقْسِطُوا إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحِبُّ الْمُقْسِطِينَ. Do justice because Allah loves those who are just and do justice. And then, of course, we have قاسطون in the Quran. وَأَمَّا الْقَاسِطُونَ فَكَانُوا لِجَهَنَّمَ حَطَبًا. About in Surah Jin, those who are qasit means wrongdoers, unjust. They are the fuel of the fire. And some exegetes like Allama Tabatabai, they say that if qist is used in the first form of thulathi mujarrad, qasata, that means injustice, qasit. If it's used in the second form, if'al, aqsata, yuqsitu, muqsit, it means doing justice. Anyhow, that's just a linguistic issue. Here, of course, it's very clear. Amara Rabbi bilqist, my Lord has commanded justice. And, of course, justice, what is justice? It is moderation. So here, because it's talking about action, which is related to one's own practice, not related to other people, this means moderation. Because justice is moderation. If it's done to others, we call it justice. If it's done with regards to our practice, it is called moderation. So, your Lord, you say, قُلْ, my Lord has commanded moderation. And what you are doing is out of moderation. You are coming out naked. It's out of moderation. Now, of course, Allah would not command you to just to sit in your houses, and especially for women, sit in their houses. No one should see them. No one should communicate with them. That is, again, not moderation. What we have here is qist, modesty and moderation in this regard especially. قُلْ أَمَرَ رَبِّي بِالْقِسْطِ. My Lord has enjoined justice. وَأَقِيمُوا وُجُوهَكُمْ عِنْدَ كُلِّ مَسْجِدٍ. Now, this qist is exactly the opposite of fahsha. Because fahsha is when you deviate from moderation in an extreme way. So Allah never ever commands something which is against moderation. Allah has commanded moderation. And now, in terms of your worship, because they were doing worship in their own understanding, that was a worship. What is worship? Why Allah has commanded you to worship? Look and think about the philosophy of it. Is what you're doing according to the philosophy of worship? Of course, you are worshipping idols, that goes against the philosophy of worship, and you are doing things during the practice of worship which again defies the very practice of worship. What your my Lord has commanded is وَأَقِيمُوا وُجُوهَكُمْ عِنْدَ كُلِّ مَسْجِدٍ. You keep up your faces to him. And faces here means heart, as is rightly translated here by Ali Quli Qara'i, say, my Lord has enjoined justice, and he has enjoined, set your heart on him at every occasion of prayer. Now about this أَقِيمُوا وُجُوهَكُمْ عِنْدَ كُلِّ مَسْجِدْ, Exodus have said many different things which I'm not going to cover it because many of them really is not related to the context or would render something meaningless. What really means keep up your faces at every occasion of, here masjid means where you pray, and of course it means occasion of prayer. At every occasion of prayer, keep up your faces to God. And face is something by which we encounter something else. And of course we do not encounter God by our faces, which is on our head. We encounter God by our soul, by ourself, by our heart. So keep up your heart, as it's translated here, keep up your heart to God at every occasion of prayer. And this is, again, very beautiful. Do not do practices which defy this understanding of worship, that you have to keep up your heart to your Lord. وَأَقِيمُوا وُجُوهَكُمْ عِنْدَ كُلِّ مَسْجِدٍ. This is one element of prayer. And the other element of prayer, وَدْعُوهُ, call him. Of course, in this, Allah is actually somehow condemning two different types. First of all, they were not calling God. They were calling idols. Not calling God is not a prayer, no matter who you call. Prayer is calling God, keeping your face towards him. وَدْعُوهُ, call him. And of course, the mushrikun would have said that, yes, of course we call him. We call him and we call our idols. Because they believed in Allah as well as they believed in their idols. So we call him and we call our idols. However, وَدْعُوهُ مُخْلِصِينَ لَهُ الدِّينَ. You cannot call anyone beside him. No partners. This is not possible at all. So, and this is moderation. This is moderation in worship. قُلْ أَمَرَ رَبِّي بِالْقِسْطِ وَأَقِيمُوا وُجُوهَكُمْ عِنْدَ كُلَّ مَسْجِدٍ. This is moderation in worship. And of course, moderation in worship is very difficult for those who try to dedicate themselves to God. Those who have tried it, we see in Christianity, in Islam, in Judaism, those who have tried to dedicate themselves to God, it has been very difficult to move on moderation because sometimes they deviate towards extremes. Either they say, no, we worship God and we live, and their life does not show that sense of worship. Or they say, we worship God while we completely dedicate ourselves to him and isolate ourselves. So they become monks, they become ascetics and these things. Again, this is out of moderation. So, قُلْ أَمَرَ رَبِّي بِالْقِسْطِ. My Lord has commanded to moderation, which is very difficult, of course, to observe. And what is the moderation? Two things. So I don't want you to become monks. I don't want you to become ascetics. I don't want you to become like some people who are completely isolated, who completely isolate themselves. What I want from you, and I don't mind how you do it, the important thing is that you do these main, basic elements of worship. أَقِيمُوا وُجُوهَكُمْ عِنْدَ كُلِّ مَسْجِدٍ. On every occasion of worship, keep up your heart to him. Which unfortunately most of us don't do. We do pray. We do go to Hajj. We do fast. But unfortunately our face, the face of our heart, is not kept towards God. And this is unfortunate. So the first element, أَقِيمُوا وُجُوهَكُمْ عِنْدَ كُلِّ مَسْجِدٍ وَدْعُوهُ مُخْلِصِينَ لَهُ الدِّينَ. Call him while you completely purify yourself for him. That's exclusivity of this worship. So these two elements actually do not somehow, one of them cannot replace the others. The two are two indisposable elements of the worship. First of all, you have to keep up your face towards him. You might do it, but you may not call him. You may call him, but you may not call him purely, exclusively. You may call other things beside him. So you have to call him and you have to keep up your face. The two main elements of prayer and worship. وَدْعُوهُ مُخْلَصِينَ لَهُ الدِّينَ. So why should we do this? One very, very important question. Why should we worship God? Why should we purify ourselves for him? Why should we worship him in the first place at all? Now, if you want to worship him, this is the way to do it. If you want to worship, this is the way to do it. Why to do it? Because you are going to return to him. And then you will find this is very important. Now you may say it's not very important to my life, not really a sort of emergency of my life, but because you are going back to him. And then you will see that this keeping up your face towards him, calling him, how it would affect your life. So, kama bada'akum ta'udun. The way he has created you, you will go back to him. That means that look at your creation. Look at the richness of this creation. Look at all different aspects. Now, especially nowadays, we have found marvelous and amazing aspects of life, of creation. In the same way that he has created you and your surrounding, the world around you, you will go to him and you will see a new creation. كَمَا بَدَأَكُمْ تَعُودُونَ. Now here, the exegetes have two main opinions here about كَمَا بَدَأَكُمْ تَعُودُونَ. One is from Ibn Abbas and Qatada and Mujahid. كَمَا خَلَقَكُمْ أَوَّلًا تَعُودُونَ بَعْدَ الْفَنَاءِ. So, in the same way that he has created you now, after you perish, and after you disappear under the earth, then he will bring you back. And when you go back, of course, to him, then of these elements of worship are very, very important. The second is كَمَا بَدَأَكُمْ تَعُودُونَ means the way you have finished your life. This is the way Allah has started our creation. Of course, only our creation in this world is complete when we come to the moment of death. Because until that time, it's undecided what we are going to do. Whether we are kafir, whether we are mu'min or whatever. Whether we are accepted, not accepted. So until that moment, we are somehow, our destiny is unclear. After that happens, then the way you die, the way he actually started your creation and ended it, then you will return. If you are kafir, you return a kafir. If you are mu'min, you return a mu'min. The way you lived in this life, in that way, you would go back to him. And again, this is reported from Ibn Abbas and Jabir. في رواية إنهم يبعثون على ما ماتوا عليه المؤمن على إيمانه والكافر على كفره. That means, then you cannot change anything. The way you lived in this world is the way you come to us, is the way you are returned. كما بدأكم تعودون. And then the continuation is in the other verse, فريقا هدى وفريقا حق. Now, Tusi says that there are two opinions about these verses. Some say that the verse finishes وَدْعُوهُ مُخْلَصِينَ لَهُ الدِّينَ. The verse finishes here. Then كَمَا بَدَعْكُمْ تَعُودُونَ فَرِيقًا هَدَى is a new verse because it's quite related. If we end the verse at تَعُودُونَ, that means the continuation of the sentence comes in the next verse. And this is something which happens in the Quran as well. فَرِيقًا هَدَى وَفَرِيقًا حَقَّ عَلَيْهِمُ الضَّلَالَةِ. And this explains actually the second, is according to the second explanation that I said. You will come to me while part of you has he guided and part has deserved error. And inshallah we'll discuss this in our next session. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. We have time for questions. Do we have any questions?
Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh.
Assalamu alaikum.
The explanation of the where you say wujuhukum
aqimu wujuhakum inda kulli masjid.
You passed that very quickly. I was wondering whether there's any relation or in the tafasir about keeping your face physically, because we see the churchgoers, you know, clapping their hands. And in fact, clapping could be denoted as something which makes your body swing. And was it in those days, in the days of the idol worshipping, that they were doing dances as such? So this verse could be taken maybe physically, so that just stand straight in prayer, because that's a lot of difference between standing straight in attention and literally moving yourself around. So is in one of the tafasir this written in there to say that?
Yes. One of the tafasir says that it means that keep your faces towards the qibla. And this practice of jahiliyyah is also mentioned in the Quran, that they were clapping and dancing. وَمَا كَانَ صَلَاتُهُمْ عِنْدَ الْبَيْتِ إِلَّا مُكَاءً وَتَصْدِيَةً. They were clapping and whistling, so to speak, تَصْدِيَةً. Yes, some of the exegetes have mentioned that. But this is probably included in that more general understanding that you have to keep up your face towards God. And that means keep up your heart towards God. Yes, that is a reasonable meaning as well. And some exegetes have mentioned it, yes.
Thank you very much indeed for your lecture. Sheikh, I just want to explore with you the role of context in trying to determine qiyas, because we clearly want to take a lesson from the Quran and don't want to repeat the mistakes of those who have been condemned in the Quran for doing wrong. So, like you said, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala guides us towards moderation, and we use that as a criterion. But of course, that is going to be influenced by our context, the way that we have, or how we interpret ethical belief, is going to determine what we consider moderate or not. So how do we balance the two? Clearly the people that are mentioned here looked at the situation and they believed that they were doing right in their own context, in the sense of doing tawaf without clothes on, because they justified it by the process that you said, that they felt they'd committed sin.
Yeah.
We could be doing the same in this context, whether it's about the rights of individuals or about the rights of women, or whatever the case may be. We may reject the true teaching of Islam for the sake of the effect of context that has on kids.
Yeah. This is, of course, a very, very important issue. And I think the way out of this, because we do things according to the culture, and we judge things according to our culture. And this is what actually our fathers have left for us, isn't it? This is what, of course, the Quran says, our forefathers used to do it, or our fathers used to do it. And usually we think that they were so stupid thinking that what their father said was right. But we are doing the same thing, because we are influenced by the culture. And culture is what our fathers have actually made for us. And unknowingly, probably, we are giving the same argument, that because we live in this culture, this is how we understand things. I think the way out of this is to give importance to internalization of the guidance, what the Quran has said. Especially the Quran is very important. And that's why we have to constantly read the Quran. We have to constantly try to understand it in the best way and in the most objective and unprejudiced way. After we have internalized the Quranic values by reading it, trying to internalize it, then sometimes we see the contrast between what the Quran tells us and what our culture tells us. And of course, as I said, to balance between the two is very, very difficult. It's a very hard work. That's why we always need an imam. And that actually justifies the position of the Shia, that we always need an imam to tell us what is justice, moderation, what is not moderation. And now that the imam is in occultation due to our faults, not due to theirs, we have to probably, the only thing that we have is the Quran, and trying to internalize the values which are taught by the Quran, which may be in contrast to the culture. And this probably alludes to, is somehow supported by many, many traditions which we have, that when the fitna here means confusion. When confusions attack you, stick to the Quran. However, of course, we need men, by men I mean, of course, men and women who are really dedicated to this, guided by the Quran, and then try to guide us, which, of course, these people also are very rarely found. So we are in a very difficult situation.
Is this a role for individuals to take on, that they should be doing this for themselves, or is this something that should be done on a community level? Bearing in mind that we don't have, if you like, an established clergy in the same way as Christianity, that there will be a decree, and that applies to the whole of Christianity. We don't have a similar situation, although we have the Marjayat and we have that process. But is this, are we saying that we should be interpreting KISS on an individual level?
Well, certainly we cannot do that on an individual level, because to find that sort of understanding needs lots of time and dedication. So it should be done on community level. Just like, for example, we need physicians in our society to cure us when we are ill. Should this be done on individual level or on community level? Certainly on individual level is better, but we cannot do it. So it should be done on community level. And this is the same thing probably.
Do we have any more questions?
Something just occurred to me in the Bill Christ. Can I give you a scenario of something that actually happens in this day and age? Is that the blood transfusion and organ donation subject. If I look at it, or if the children look at it, and say that there is a decree to say that you can receive but you cannot donate, I think that doesn't go down very well in the terms of KISS. Would that be right?
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
Well, some fuqaha say you can donate as well. And sometimes they say it's even wajib to donate. I was reading Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwa on kidney donation. And he said that in some cases it becomes wajib if it doesn't seriously harm the person and the life of other person is really dependent on it, it becomes wajib sometimes. So it's not a unanimous rule. Sorry. Yes.
You know, you said that it was only the Quran, but isn't the working, the Ahlul Bayt, the works of like Najul Balagha, the works of all the Imams that we have down, the traditions that are from them, that are also important?
Yeah, they're all explanations of the Quran, actually. So we read them to understand the Quran better. The sole guidance, of course, is the Quran. But it has been matched by Ahlul Bayt, as we have in Hadith of Saqalain, because, as the Prophet said, these two do not part from each other. So those are explanations. However, I did not emphasize on that because it's hadith, and to verify the and to authenticate the hadith again depends on the Quran. It should not go against the Quran. If it goes against the Quran, we just discard it. So it comes back to the Quran, especially now at the time of occultation. At the time of the presence of the Imam, of course, the Quran is explained by the Imam. Now, their statements should be judged by the Quran. And if it's not against the Quran, then it's an explanation of the Quran. So that's why I mentioned the Quran solely. Of course, hadith is a very, very important part of the religious literature.
Said, any confusion, you should base yourself on the Quran, yeah? Get answers from the Quran. Now, Sunnis, that applies both to Sunnis and Shias.
Yes, of course, to all Muslims.
Yeah, but obviously when you go deep down, Sunni interpretation, Shia interpretation is different, yeah? So whose prayers do you think gets answered more, Shias or Sunnis, in God's eyes?
Anyone who calls Allah sincerely will receive a response from God.
So there's no discrimination?
There is not?
No discrimination.
No discrimination, of course. Allah wouldn't do injustice.
So how come is it that the Sunnis and Shias, yet we cannot sit together and discuss? I know this is Qajan.
Because they're hard-headed. Huh? Yeah. They cannot sit hard-headed. They cannot sit together and discuss. We have to sit together and discuss. Of course, you cannot say that both are right. It's not possible. It is possible that both are wrong, but it's not possible that both are right, because they say opposite things, contradictory things. So one of them should be right, one of them should be wrong. But this does not still deny the fact that any servant of God, because those who are born in Sunni families are usually Sunni, it's not their fault. Those who are born in Shi'i families are usually Shi'i. So if they sincerely call God, God would respond. If a Christian sincerely calls God, God would respond. Even the Quran tells us, we discussed this before, that Mushrikun, when they came into that situation of izdirar, وَإِذَا رَكَبُوا فِي الْفُلْكَ دَعَوُ اللَّهَ مُخْلِصِينَ لَهُ الدِّينَ, when they sat on the, they boarded the ship, the ship was being on the verge of drowning, then they called God sincerely and God responded. So anyone calling God sincerely, God will respond.
Sheikh, thank you. I don't know whether I misheard you or not. Is that did you say that the Imam is in occultation because of our man's action?
Because of our fault, yeah.
Our fault. So, but wasn't that actually... wasn't that going to happen in any case, because Allah would have taken him in occultation? Otherwise, there wouldn't have been this understanding of that he would come back and declare himself. And so where will then all this fall?
No, he went to occultation because of our faults. When I say our, I mean, of course, human beings. Not us, because we were not present at that time, but because... we human beings, we Muslims, killed and persecuted the imams, alayhim salam. At the end, of course, it was futile, imams coming and being killed, coming and being killed. So the imam was forced to occultation. It was our fault. Now, because that has happened, then we are promised that he will come back and he will fill the earth with justice. So we should think of this on two levels. It wouldn't have happened if we did not treat the imam the way we treated them. Now that we have treated them, then this is the case. This is how it's going to happen.
So you mean to say that supposing if this hadn't happened, that he would have lived his normal life, maybe 60, 70, 100 years or whatever?
We don't know what would have happened. If this didn't happen, we don't know. If Adam alayhi salam did not eat from that shajara, we don't know what would have happened.
So this seems that it's all on circumstances, circumstantial sort of events.
due to the certain event take place, and this is why it happens.
Yeah, you are not predeterminist, are you? Are you predeterminist?
No, I'm not.
So things may happen according to what we do. Yeah.
Do we have any more questions?
Yeah. Assalamu alaikum. So, if it wasn't predetermined, doesn't that kind of make potentially the Ithna Asharis potentially wrong? Because there are other branches of Shia which don't believe in the imamate terminated. So the idea, the strong case for Ithna Asharis is there's lots of ahadith from the time of the Prophet which refer to the 12 kings, which means it was predetermined, and there's nothing that we could have done to stop. Otherwise, the case for Ithna Asharis becomes much weaker.
The 12 was predetermined, but occultation was not predetermined, of course. The 12, because the Prophet said there will be 12 kings or 12 khalifa after me, and the 12 came. But the 12th one went into occultation. Had these 12... let's think about this way now. Let's go into conjectures. Had these 12 established justice the way God wanted it, and had these 12 been given the opportunity to disseminate guidance the way they wanted it, then probably after the 12th, there wouldn't have been any need for the imam. People themselves would have found the opportunity to understand the Quran in the best way, because there was no argument, there was no misinterpretation. So this was another course of events which would have been possible. The 12 was predetermined, of course. Allah had willed it. But how did they live? What would have happened to them? Of course, everything is predetermined in a way. But, of course, it's predetermined according to our decisions, what we decide to do. Then, of course, that eternal decree of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala would have been decreed according to that. This is very complicated, of course, I warn you, but we have to only think in this way, otherwise... We will get absolutely confused, and we say things that if, for example, we do not drink wine, Allah would have somehow been wrong in not predetermining it, for example.
Any more questions? Okay, we'll end there. Thank you very much, Sheikh.
Okay, thank you. Allahumma salli ala.